Hi, my name is Dr. Zanna Beams, and I'm here to talk to you today about a program that I've been developing with a team of partners throughout the community. The program is called Rubix, and it's a preventive and corrective mental health program that helps identify challenges and areas of strength in 6 to 8 different categories. And then by identifying those challenges and strengths, you can work to make your life even better or make yourself feel better if you're in a real challenge phase. And it's also a way of ensuring that you design a better life for you and your family and everyone around you. These categories of wellness are as follows. They are physical wellness, social wellness, environmental wellness, emotional wellness, financial or occupational wellness, and intellectual wellness. And we're going to be talking in this podcast about each of those categories. And today we're going to talk about the social category. And when I was thinking about who to talk with about social wellness, it took me about 39 microseconds to figure out who I should talk to. So my guest today is Rebecca Fields, and she's somebody that I've been friends with for more than half my life. I won't tell you how many years that is, but we've known each other since we were a lot younger than we are now, and I absolutely count Rebecca amongst one of my bestest friends in the universe. And the reason why it was very clear to me that Rebecca was the person to talk to about social wellness is because I've often thought about how she's absolutely killing it in her social life. She has tons of good friends, both very close, deep friendships, and also friends in the community and beyond. And she's really engaged in our community. And I've always emulated her approach to her social relationships everywhere from the family all the way out to the broader community. And so I, like I said, thought it was pretty clear that that's who I should talk to about how to crush it in your social life. So let's get started. Rebecca, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. This is so great. Obviously, we talk all the time, and just being here in this setting, it's just a bit of a different perspective. So I'm Rebecca Fields, and I grew up here in Howard County. I left for college, and then I left several years after that. And then I guess I've been back for almost 20 years now. I kind of laugh because I think I spent the majority of my childhood saying I'd never move back here. And then as luck would have it, and I do think it is luck, and I'm grateful, I moved back here. And so, as I said, I've been here for almost 20 years. I work full time. I work for the federal government in Washington. I have a husband, 2 children, and a dog, and a very fulfilling life. There's a lot going on.
It's true. There is a lot going on. And so I kind of want to ask you, I know when I asked you to do this interview, you were like instantly agreeable, which I am so grateful for because it shows what a good friend you are. And then you were like, so what exactly are we talking about? So tell me a little bit about how you understand what I really wanted to talk to you about today. Like, what do you understand about Rubix and especially the social category of Rubix?
So you shared with me several weeks ago this project, and I immediately took to it. Obviously, I'm not a healthcare professional, but I think it is so important. I have an 11 and a 14-year-old. So when I hear social, I instantly think about social media and just everything that's happening online these days. So it's very near and dear to my heart. Of course, there's a huge other piece of the social category, which is relationships. And so when you ask me to do this, you know, if you ask me to do something, Z, of course I'm going to do it. So, you know, that was a natural instinct, but I wasn't really exactly sure the direction that it was going to go. So, you know, when I was thinking about it, I thought really it's about sort of the relationships, what's happening, whether it's those really close relationships with friends and families and moving out to those broader relationships in the community.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I think, you know, just getting ready for this conversation, we've already had a chance to have like some more serious and deeper conversations than we've had in a long time.
So true.
And that's really fun. And also, I really did want to learn from you in a like directed and clear way about how you do approach maintaining long-term friendships and also making new deep friendships, sort of starting in and expanding out. So, you know, like I said, we've been friends for more than half our lives at this point, and we've maintained a close relationship through that whole time. And I know a lot of your other close friends, and I know that you very conscientiously and intentionally invest in those relationships. And I wanted to ask you what kinds of strategies and approaches you employ in maintaining those long-term close friendships.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple things I do, and I should say that I think some I do actively and some I don't. People are busy these days. That's no surprise. And I have to say, I actually don't really like to say people are busy because it's so obvious. Yes, we are all busy, but it's about taking the time and I guess being intentional about making the opportunities, you know, putting it out there so that you can connect with people. So I guess for me, you know, it's the little things like just constantly following up with people. So like if I have a friend that says something to me, like for instance, I just had a friend who was in grad school. And when I would talk to her, she would mention something about like the big project being due next Friday. And I will literally make a note in my calendar that, you know, so-and-so is finishing this big project, check in. And so I do that often. And I always laugh, I'm making all these notes. I mean, if you saw my calendar, you would actually think I'm the busiest person, but little do you realize that that's actually my place for taking notes. But I feel like that's my way of showing someone that I care about them. I'm listening to them. I know what's going on in their life. We can't check in every day, but it's those little pieces that I hope go a long way.
Yeah. So like yesterday, I knew that you had a really big project and I was thinking about you all day and I couldn't wait till the day was over so I could check in and see how your project wrapped up. So
yes, and I have to tell you, I so appreciated that. I was sitting there last night and I saw a text and it said, how did everything go today? And I thought to myself, that means a lot to me. Z took the time to remember that I had something really big happening at work. I was stressed about it. And that quick little check-in was so huge. It was like a little thing in your day, but it made such an impact on me. And that's what I'm always hoping to do with my relationships as well.
So this, I have another follow-up question, but this brings up, I was listening to a book a couple weeks ago called Mama's Last Hug by Franz De Waal, and it's about the evolutionary biology of primates. Because I'm a nerd like that. But there's a line that stuck with me from that book, and he's talking about how much effort primate parents put in to raising their primate babies. He's primarily works with chimps. And, you know, he says, people ask me a lot, like, why do they put all this effort in? Why do they care? They don't have the same kind of loving relationships that we do with our children, right? Or why do you take care of a dog? They don't do anything for you, you know? And he says, we don't care for someone because we love them. We love them because we care for them. So that investment that we make in each other, it builds our love and our relationship. That was such a deep, like, life-changing way of encapsulating that for me, and especially because that thoughtfulness, you know, is a form of care in the modern world. Most of us don't need anybody to do tasks for us or feed us or whatever, but that kind of care builds the love and continues the love between people. So I just love that. We don't care for them because we love them. We love them because we care for them. We've invested in each other, and the continual investment in each other builds the relationship and maintains the relationship.
Exactly. And it's reciprocal. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you sent that text to me, I took it as, you know, this show of love. And I am sure that you felt good sending that text saying, this is my way of showing Rebecca that I care about her and I know what's going on. So it's very reciprocal. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important. Mm-hmm. It's such a little easy thing to do. But then again, there's lots of easy things that we can do. Mm-hmm. It's just making the time and finding those little places where we can insert these things in our daily lives.
Yeah. So we have known each other for a long time, and I know that you have similar, very long-term friendships with a number of other folks that I also share friendships with. Tell me a little bit about making new deep friendships in the community and how you've been so successful at doing that, because I think you have.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for saying that you think I've been successful. And when in your opening statement, you were saying, oh, well, you know, I was trying to see who was killing it in this category. So I have to tell you, that is such a compliment to me. So first, thank you so much for that. But it's a good question that you ask, because I have to say, this is something that over the last few years, I feel like I have really focused on a lot, spent a lot of time thinking about and doing. You know, I'm in my mid to late 40s, and at this point in people's lives, you know, generally friendships are established. So I think so often it's hard to kind of break in and meet new friends and make new friends. But I kind of had this little talk with myself fairly recently, and it was kind of about putting myself out there and really making this conscious effort about trying to make new friends. So I would see people who I was friendly with. Obviously, you know, there's a difference between friendly and being friends. And so I have put myself out there, and I've asked people to go for walks or go for coffee or let's go grab a drink. And it's been great. And I've really enjoyed it. I think they've enjoyed it. I'd like to think so. But like I said, it was very intentional that I've done these things, because I think it's important to continually build friendships and find new friendships. One of the things that I've realized about myself is that many years ago, I really only wanted to be friends with people who were around my age. That was really important to me. And in the last several years, I've had this very clear realization that I want to be friends with so many more people. Yes, I want to be friends with people who are like me, but I really value those diverse opinions and thoughts. And I realize everyone has something to bring to the table. So whether I'm friends with somebody who's 30 years old or somebody who's 60, we all bring something different and we all have something to contribute. And it's been, to me, like, it's just been incredible. And I feel like I've grown so much by having these new friendships. I'm so appreciative of it.
I want you to tell everybody about two things. One is our girls' dinners and how that came about. And the other one is your supper club.
Okay. So several years ago, a friend of mine who was new to the area, actually, she was a new friend to me, a very new friend. And she said, oh, Rebecca, you just seem to know people. You know, I think it'd be so great. Can you put together a dinner club, like a monthly dinner club? And I thought, well, that sounds fun. Okay. And so I was very thoughtful about it. And I asked two of my friends who didn't know each other to join this supper club. And they said, sure, that sounds great. And so as it turns out, it's kind of funny, the original friend who asked me to put this together dropped out. She just kind of had some other things going on. And then I guess maybe like a year or so later, Z and I were talking about it. We were talking about it. And I said, hey, do you want to join? And so now for several years, we've had this monthly dinner club. And what I love about it is that we all come from different walks of life. We all live in different neighborhoods. We all have different jobs. We have different friends, but we have this very communal bond, which initially was me. But I like to think that each one of us, like the other three, now has its own different and separate bond with each other. And I love it because, again, we all bring something to the table. Literally, we are at dinner. But we just have such great conversations, and they're so varied. They're so different. And I feel like the four of us have this really incredibly strong friendship and relationship and respect for each other. And so for me, that's so incredibly important. And I love it. I love going to monthly dinner. And I know every once in a while we can't make it happen every month, but we do our best to make it up. And then the other thing that you asked about was this supper club. So this is another thing that I love. And I can't take credit because I'm not the one that came up with the idea. But the woman who did.
But you jumped at the opportunity.
I did. So the woman who developed this idea, or I should say put out the email to several different people about this, she had included my husband and I on it. And it's funny because my husband and I saw the email and I was like, oh my God, this is really interesting. And then I looked at the people on the list and I was like, but I'm not really close friends with anybody. I knew everybody on the list, but I just wasn't close. We were sort of friendly, not so much really good friends. And it's funny, both my husband and I thought the same thing. We were like, absolutely. Because it's so important to us, again, to kind of put ourselves out there, meet new people. And it's a very interesting group. And I can speak for my husband too. We love going every month to Supper Club. It's just such a fun night. It's so different. The conversations are never the same. I always feel like when I come out of Supper Club, I am just sort of a happier, more inspired, more enlightened person. And it's not to say that we have deep conversations. I mean, sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. But just to kind of be with people, learning new things, it's exciting.
So I have a weird question about Supper Club. Do you run into people from Supper Club, like when you go to the grocery store or the gym? And how does it make you feel if you run into those people just kind of outside of dinner, like party events?
It's great. Most of the people in the Supper Club are in my neighborhood, not my immediate neighborhood, but sort of the larger one. So very often I am running into them. And so if I'm not running into them at the grocery store or at the coffee shop, I'm seeing them at other parties or school events. So I do see them fairly often. And what's nice is that they've also morphed into deeper friendships. And to me, again, that's just like this added benefit of going to Supper Club.
So does it make you feel more connected to your neighborhood and community when you kind of then run into those people just out and about?
Absolutely.
Because, you know, that feeling of anonymity, kind of like, oh, I'm just here, can be isolating. But then when you just run into people that you know here and there, that's unusual, I think, in a sort of random professional suburban life.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And as I said, I mean, these friendships have really grown, and it just sort of confirms why we joined the Supper Club. And I should also say, I was so flattered when we got this email about joining Supper Club. I mean, anytime, and I've said this to people before, anytime anybody invites me to anything, I am so flattered. I am so appreciative. I think it's such an honor when somebody invites me to something. And I hope that they feel the same way too. I mean, when I invite people out, it's because it's very intentional, it's very thoughtful, and it's because I want to get together with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other question I have is a kind of a weird one, but has it ever come up where you or somebody else in that group has found themselves in a time of need or loss, and someone from that group has been able to be of support? I know that with our girlfriends, we have certainly supported each other through some tough stuff and good stuff over the past couple of years.
Yes, definitely. And I'm trying to think. I think there's been a few examples. I can't say for me that like I've ever been in a time of need where I've needed something. I mean, fortunately, I'm glad to say that hasn't happened. But there's been a couple of things that have happened with friends in the Supper Club. And individually, I think people really have been able to reach out.
Yeah.
So it's been really helpful to that person.
There's some research that I want to get deeper into that we obviously don't have time for today, but that I would love to think and learn more about. Everybody sort of knows that deep connections in your social life are important for your health, and that there are associations between longevity and deep friendships and healthy marriages and that kind of thing. But there's some newer research about broader, lower level friendships around your community and improved health, well-being, and longevity in actual measures of health, like literally blood pressure and, you know, that kind of thing, heart disease, that kind of thing. And so I think that's part of what motivates that question. I just think it's really, really fascinating to think about how much being socially connected to each other, both deeply and at a lighter level, literally physically improves our well-being. And when you talk about that sense of well-being, you know, when you leave your neighborhood Supper Club or our, you know, girls' dinner evenings, that's part of it. But there's also the actual, you know, numerically measurable benefit to it that I think is really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And the reality is that we can't have deep friendships with everybody. There's only so much time in the day.
Yeah.
So as I said, I'm always grateful for both friendships, for those deep deep friendships, for those long-term friendships like ours and many of my friends that date back to high school. But I'm equally appreciative of all of these newer friendships, and they're not at that deeper level just because of time and sort of newness of it. And if it gets to that point, wonderful. But mm-hmm. I'm still equally appreciative of sort of those not so deep friendships.
Yeah. Speaking of time, I also want to spend a decent chunk of time talking about your skill both in communicating clearly and resolving conflict. And obviously those two go together. I think you're really a master of resolving conflict without it. It almost doesn't even feel like conflict, and you just get the problem solved. And I really admire your ability to do that. And you, I want to remind you, you said something to me the other day that's been so powerful for me to continue to think about after our conversation about how you even motivate yourself to address a conflict. You remember we were talking about the relationship surviving or not surviving?
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. So I have to say that I feel like communication and conflict, it's something that I've had on my mind over the last couple of years. And specifically, I've really focused in on watching other people. I watch people so much. It may seem a little creepy. Nobody else knows I'm watching. It's just me. But two things. One is I watch people who I think are really good at communicating and really skilled at communicating. But then I also watch everyone else because sometimes I don't know who's really skilled at communicating. So I say this because I have learned a lot from watching other people. So when it comes to conflict, you and I were talking the other day, and one of the things that I think when I'm in a conflict or I'm having this tough conversation is, what do I want from the relationship? You know, there's two choices. Either we can continue this discussion and try and figure out what's going on, come to a solution, or we could both walk away and things could really continue to deteriorate. So I constantly have this in my head, you know, what is it that I want to do? And most often, I really look to trying to figure out what it is, and so that the relationship doesn't continue to deteriorate. Now, I won't say I am perfect. There are, as we sit here, there's a couple of conversations that I still need to have with people, but it's something that I continually think about. It's constantly in the forefront of my mind. And so that question of, what do I want for the relationship? You know, what do I want for me? What do I want for that other person? Where do I want this to go? It's something that I feel like helps drive that conversation.
Yeah, so I'm someone that's really, you wouldn't necessarily know this, I'm kind of argumentative, but I'm also really conflict averse.
Yeah.
And so I was asking you how you find the motivation to even begin to address a conflict. And you said something really powerful, which was, if you're in a tough place with somebody, you're already in a tough place. So do you want the relationship to survive or do you want it to go away? Because you're in a tough place. If you don't do anything about it, it's either going to stay tough or get worse. It can't get any worse. So if you want it to survive, do something. It'll either stay bad or it'll get better. And if it stays bad, it's already bad. That's not a worsening.
Right.
Or it'll
right.
get better. And that's been really liberating for me because I'm always conflict averse because I don't have any training in addressing that sort of in my family culture, but also, or any official training like you have. But also, I just am always worried that I'll then lose the relationship completely. And realizing what you said about like, well, you're already on that path.
Right. So what's the best thing that can happen?
Yeah.
It can turn around.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is about taking risk. It's funny. I think I'm actually a fairly risk averse person. And I have been for most of my life. But as I get older, I find that I'm taking more risks and I'm very aware of these risks. And it doesn't have to be something like, oh my God, risk, you know, something so huge. Being here today, you know, you asked me, can you come? And I said, absolutely. And then I was like, oh my God, this is a really big risk. I don't really know what I'm doing here. So, you know, just doing that. But, you know, what I think when it comes to conflict, it's about taking that risk and taking that next step. And I think it's how you say it, you know, how you have that conversation with somebody, creating that safe environment so that they feel comfortable sort of speaking their truth. Something I've learned very recently is that We all have stories in our heads. We don't necessarily know what's going on. We jump to conclusions. So it's giving, sort of like opening up that space to have that conversation and really have that other person be able to sort of state their truth and what's really going on, and not us just jumping to that conclusion of something that could totally be wrong.
Yeah, you said something there that's really powerful about telling yourself stories. And I feel like that feeds into kind of something you've also taught me about how to address a difficult situation, a conversation about a difficult situation or a difficult conversation, where you talk about facts first. Yeah. And so avoiding the story, I think, one, I want you to talk a little bit about that, like how you have a difficult conversation that's based in starting facts first. But also, I just thought about, like, if I start telling myself a story, instead of going down that road, I can say, wait, what are the facts first?
That's right.
It's not the story. It's what actually happened.
Exactly. You know? And when you present the facts, I feel like it can really put people at ease, because you're not making something up. You're not fabricating something. You're not even like thinking in your head, well, maybe this is it. No, the facts are the facts. This is what happened. And it's about like telling the facts, stating the facts. And then I think what's so important is, how did it make you feel? When you say to somebody, this is how it made me feel, and you're having this difficult conversation, you know, if somebody were to say that to me, it's like I would stop and I would think, and I feel like people appreciate it. They may not appreciate it at the moment, but it's a sign of respect. That it's respect that I care enough about you to tell you that this is bothering me and this is how it's making me feel. And when you put it in that, in sort of you couch it in that way, I think it creates a safer environment for that person to really sort of internalize what you've been saying, to think about it, and to start that healthy dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you have any goals for your social connections coming up in the next year or two?
I do. When I was thinking about this conversation and not exactly sure how it was going to go today, I was thinking about the things that I've done socially in the community over the years. So what I realized that there was sort of a pattern where sometimes I would be doing more and sometimes I would be doing nothing. And one of the things that I've realized lately is that I want to do more in the larger community, not so much my neighborhood, but really in the larger sense of like Howard County. And so I am looking to get involved in the Howard County government on one of the commissions. And I reached out to somebody about this. And so there does look to be some openings. I need to put in a letter of interest, my resume, all those good things. So it's something that has been on my mind, sort of a way of really serving and giving back to the larger community. So I'm hopeful that that will come to fruition. That's kind of my big thing. But the other thing is that sort of in a little bit of a different perspective is still attending community events. So there have been so many things that I've wanted to attend that we just haven't had time. But a couple of things that we've done in the last probably year or two is we took our kids to BWI. We were protesting the current administration's immigration plan. And that was really great. That was my kids' first protest. And so I was so happy to bring them and show them how to be a part of something. And also in the last year, we attended the community service at the local mosque. This was in response to the Christchurch bombings. And so it's things like that. I mean, I don't want it to be a terrible event that has happened for us to be able to go to these community events, but those are just two that sort of come to mind, and really making more of a conscious effort to attend more community outings and really feel a greater sense, literally, of the word community.
Well, everything you've said in the past half hour has basically confirmed that I'm right. You're killing it in your social connections to both people in your immediate relationships, community, and broader and beyond. And I can't even I don't even know how to express to you how much I admire your intentionality and the sort of loving heart with which you proceed through all of your relationships. I really continue to learn a lot from you. I've been learning from you since we were 14 years old, and I continue to learn a lot from you. I'm really moved.
Thank you.
I love you.
I love you too. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the Rubik's Mental Health and Wellness Podcast. We'll return next month for more strategic conversation about how to live our most meaningful and fulfilling lives.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.